Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you're listening to Mushing Radio here on KVRF 89.7 in the Mattsu Valley, RadioFreePalmer.org is our live streaming site, and you can hear us always over on DogWorksRadio.com. Make sure you follow us on social media. Just search for DogWorks Radio. And do us a favor, if you're over on iTunes, hit that subscribe button to DogWorks Radio, and make sure you leave us a review. We would love to have a positive review from our listeners. So calling in from, I assume, sunny California is Alex Stein. Alex, how's it going?
It's going very well, Robert, and it indeed is nice and sunny here. We've had some really hot weather, but it seems finally to be cooling down. And I understand you've had some really great weather up there as well.
You know, as we mentioned right before we went on, it's absolutely beautiful this week. We haven't had rain in the last couple of weeks, but you know, we're waiting for that white stuff. It looks like it's coming down the mountain, so to speak, but it's beautiful here in Palmer. I'm looking out the window here on Main Street, and you can't ask for better weather unless you're a musher. And interestingly enough, Alex, that is the topic for today, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And just very briefly before we get into that, I wanted to mention, we had mentioned last time that our friend Cindy Godbee is doing a benefit screening of the Lance Mackey documentary, The Great Alone, in Skagway this Friday. And we just recently learned that Lance himself is coming down to Skagway for this showing. So if you are in or around Skagway this weekend on Friday evening, come down, watch the movie. It's a really, really fantastic movie. And come and you'll have a chance to meet Lance and talk to him and get autographs. And just briefly, he had dropped out of Iditarod for 2017 to concentrate on some health issues. Nothing life-threatening, but just felt like there were some issues, especially involving his hands, that he really wanted to get a handle on before he comes back to compete in Iditarod.
You know, when you were saying that, Alex, about Skagway, I got a little bit of a smile on my face when you said in and around Skagway. Can you tell folks that are listening anywhere else other than Alaska how difficult it is to get in or around Skagway, Alaska?
Well, you know, I actually briefly thought, oh, I should fly up for this screening. That's not an easy thing. The closest major airport is in Whitehorse, and that's about a 3.5-hour drive away. So Skagway is a beautiful, amazing little town, but not the easiest place in the world to get to unless you have a lot of time. You know, it's on several of the ferries, and that's a beautiful way to go there. Or if you want to take a very, very long drive through Canada and back, depositing you in Skagway at the end.
You know, I would have to argue with you, Alex, and say that Skagway may be one of the most difficult towns to get into in the United States. I know you can get into Dead Horse, Alaska, all the way at the top of the world. You can get into Nome, Kotzebue, Dillingham, even some of those more remote islands on the Aleutians a little easier than you could get into Skagway.
Well, there are planes that fly in and out of Skagway, but they're very, very small planes. They're like the 5- and 7-seater planes that fly in and out. And so you can technically fly to Skagway from places like Juneau, but a lot of the times if there's any kind of weather, the planes aren't flying. So you're right. It's not an easy place to get into.
Well, I wish Lance all the best and Cindy for putting this on. He can use all the help that he can get. He is a very well-loved musher in the Iditarod community. It pretty much goes hand-in-hand. When you say Iditarod, typically you're saying Lance Mackey in the second sentence, so we do wish him well. Just a couple of weeks ago, he was up at the the symposium we had up here in Willow, and they screened his movie for the participants as well, and he talked after the movie with a Q&A. I wasn't able to go to that. I had class down at UAA, but it looked like it was a pretty good attendance for that screening, and we hope that he does well, and hope we see him back in, I guess that would be 2018, Iditarod, is that right?
Yeah.
So today, we are going to talk about climate change and mushing. Now, this could probably be a whole expose series that you may see on the nightly news where they have a little bit of a special commentary every night for a week, but we're going to try to sum it up in about 20 minutes or so. I think it's a very interesting topic because we are in the midst of it now, not only up in Alaska, but throughout the country as well. Just to get this started, Alex, the reason I wanted to bring this up is I saw a Facebook posting, I guess it was yesterday or the day before, and it was a screenshot of the race schedule for the eastern United States, Maine, New England, Vermont, that area of the country. And that's usually a very vibrant place for mushing during the winter, and it was hauntingly absent. They only had one race scheduled for the entire winter, and I believe that was the Can-Am race, which I believe is in late winter, maybe even March. I'm not sure on that date. But it's happening everywhere. I know races have been canceled all over the country in the last few years, and it's becoming a real threat to mushing, isn't it?
It really is. And just to clarify a little bit, when we talk about climate change, what we're really talking about is not necessarily variations in how one winter is compared to the next, but a trend towards, in most cases, and especially in Alaska, towards the winters getting a lot warmer, there being perhaps a lot less snowfall, and also shifting weather patterns. So in the past 10 years or so, we've seen some really heavy snowfalls in places like New York, where they have not traditionally had a lot of snow during the winter. But we've also seen in places like Denver that we've had periods where there's been heavy snowfall, and then 2 or 3 days later, it's been 70 degrees. So there's been, in addition to a trend of average temperatures getting warmer, we've had a trend towards the weather just being much, much more variable. So even when there is snow, it's not necessarily snow that is going to stick around because of temperatures getting warmer.
Right. You know, I was talking to a group of folks over at the Chugiak Dog Mushers Association Dryland races, and I want to talk about that race in particular in a second, but I was talking to some old-timers around here, and they said that the real marked change was in about 2000 to 2002 or 2003, where all of a sudden winters came much later, they had much less snow, it melted faster, it had a harder time staying on the ground, much more rain, much more ice. And sort of the consensus is, at least in the mushing circles, is over the next 5, 10, 15 years, our climate here in South Central Alaska, in Anchorage proper, and within 100 miles or so, if you drew a circle around Anchorage, it will look more and more like Seattle. And I think that it's already happening. Even in the 6 years, this is my sixth winter here, it's a marked change just in that amount of time. I remember the first couple of years I was here, very little rain after August, early September, and now we're having rain all the way up into late September, early October. And, there's been many a years when I first arrived here where there was snow well before Halloween, and typically we were on sleds and ready to rock and roll by Thanksgiving. But as we mentioned at the top, I could literally go outside right now in a pair of shorts and a sweatshirt and feel very comfortable. You know, the kids are out with their bikes, and the moms are walking the babies in, it looks like spring clothes. It's just a very interesting time for South Central in particular, and for folks that are thinking about training and getting ready to run in these big races that may or may not even happen.
Right. And, obviously we've seen in Iditarod We've seen courses be, especially the early part of the course, be very, very difficult to pass. 3 years in particular, and we had the 1 year where it was, the start was moved up to Fairbanks. I just wanted to mention that what we're talking about for the continental U.S. is we're talking about temperatures, average temperatures that are going up maybe 1 or 2 degrees Fahrenheit over the course of 40 or 50 years. In Alaska, it's about double that. And while that doesn't seem like an enormous amount to be talking about 4 degrees Fahrenheit, that when that becomes the difference between freezing and not freezing, or when it becomes the difference between a hard freeze that is going to stay for a couple of weeks and, you know, dipping below freezing and then coming back up, that can have enormous effects on training and on these races.
Right. In South Central here in particular, the last 3 seasons in the months of late December, even into early February, it's been almost impossible to run on sleds because it's just been a sheet of ice out on our trails. Now, it can be done with some pretty good maneuvering, but it's tough to train when it's a sheet of ice out there. And what's happening, as you mentioned, is it's getting up there just enough. And it may not even be above freezing, Alex, but, you know, typically here in Alaska, we have overcast skies most days. It keeps it a little warmer on the surface, but it gets quite chilly at night. But if the clouds are gone and the sun is out, all of that snow begins to melt very quickly, and there goes the trails for us mushers.
Right. It's not exactly the same, but it's similar to if you have snow on a road and then the sun comes out, the sun beating down on the snow is going to warm it up, and then it's going to refreeze at night. And that's a much more difficult environment to run on top of than just something that is purely cold and remains cold.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about the racing in general. I guess it was 3 weeks, maybe 4 weeks now, we had on Deborah Summers from the Chugiak Dog Mushers Association, and I asked her very specifically, what was the reason why you guys started up this Dryland Mush Series? And for a little bit of historical information, there has never been a Dryland Mush Series in Alaska until 3 years ago when the Chugiak Club, which is just north of Anchorage, started up their series. And she said point blank, it's because of the weather. They just don't know if they're going to be able to put on a full race series over the winter. In the last couple of winters, Alex, they've had almost every race canceled through their club throughout the winter, you know, into, you know, December and January. And typically they begin to run races at least when the weather is good. They have point series races, starting around Thanksgiving weekend. And mushing, sprint mushing in particular, that's the way a lot of these folks earn their keep. They're sprint mushers. They're hoping to get, you know, the purse money so they can take care of their dogs, et cetera, et cetera. And if their clubs do not have races, they don't have a way to earn money, which is an entirely different contrast than Iditarod or the Yukon Quest, where it's one race a year, and if you do very well, that week or two on the trail can net you a payday. Now, that payday will not take care of all of your expenses, but it'll at least help you defer some of those costs. So if you don't have any snow to mush on, and that is your livelihood, that makes things very difficult if the weather doesn't cooperate.
Absolutely. And not only is that true about the racers participating in these particular races, but for every team that is participating, there are multiple teams that are training people who are learning how to be mushers, people who, you know, want in 3 or 4 years to start competing either in sprint races or long distance or mid distance races. So we're talking about not only the 50 or 60 people participating in any particular race, but also hundreds of other racers and thousands of other dogs who are all training to do this.
And, you know, myself in particular, I've said several times on this show that I've signed up for qualifying races every year, and it seems for the last 3 or 4 years, one of those races is canceled. And when you're trying to qualify for Iditarod, you have to do three races, two races of at least 200 or 300, and then at least one race of 200 or 150 miles in order to qualify. And then you can register for Iditarod the following year. But if one of those, just one of those races gets canceled, and it seems like every year one of them is, you pretty much have to put that qualification off to the following year. Yes, you can have them in your back pocket. They have changed that rule with Iditarod in the recent history. But if you if it takes you 3 or 4 years to qualify, the dogs that you started with, even if they're very young two-year-olds, by the time you get ready to go on Iditarod, they're 6 or 7 years old. And the reason I bring this up, Alex, and I know we talked very briefly about it on the show, I believe our last show, on why we thought the Iditarod numbers were down so much. I think that this has a big deal with that because people just aren't able to bring things together to get up there to the starting line.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, that is something that is only going to continue as, you know, we all hope every winter that this winter will be an anomaly and there will be a lot of snow and it will be very cold. But as the trend is towards the winters getting warmer and warmer, we're going to see this accelerating and I think becoming more and more the rule rather than the exception as time goes on.
So, again, not to be doom and gloom, but just one other point in regards to this in Alaska in particular and in South Central here where we're at in particular, many, many mushers are having to pack up their dogs and move north. Pretty much all of the mushers down on the Kenai Peninsula, and there's some big teams down there. The Osmars are down there. The Seavies are down there. Sarah Stokely and her husband Travis Beals are down there. Several mushers are down there. Monica Zappa is down there. They've had to pretty much pack up everything they have and move north, well north of Willow, typically to the Denali Highway up near Cantwell just to find snow. And that is another hardship that I think a lot of mushers just aren't prepared for.
Right. And in addition to the people who are actually packing up and moving, a lot of the folks who are still in the Anchorage or Willow area will find themselves more and more, if they want to get out on snow, that they will be driving 4 or 5 or 6 hours north in order to get the decent snow that they need to get their miles in.
Right. So let's turn this a little bit, let's turn the tables a little bit from a fan perspective, Alex. What do you think about all this? I know that you're a huge Iditarod fan. I don't think they're going to, you know, do away with the Iditarod or the Yukon Quest or anything like that. I think it's still going to be able to continue on. It is so late in the season, being early March, that, you know, just by the laws of averages, the snow has packed up enough over, you know, over time where they have enough snow to start the race. And, of course, as you work your way northwest, snow becomes much, much better. But then you get to the coast, and that lack of snow is there again. So what do you think about this whole thing as a mushing fan? Maybe not just Iditarod in particular, but all of mushing, you know, the mid-distance, all the races in particular.
I think my prediction, and this is based on nothing more than a hunch, is that as time goes on, I think we're going to see the start go further north, perhaps even switch considerably farther north, maybe even to Fairbanks on a permanent basis. I think we might also see some different starting time for the Iditarod. We've traditionally, it's always been the first week in March. There's some talk that in some parts of the race course that it's better in February. So I think that there might eventually need to be an adjustment of that. From a fan perspective, I think as long as the race can continue and there can be some way of having the race be approximately the same length and to have snow, I think people are really still going to flock to it and follow it. Of course, it's much harder to follow it, and it's much harder for people who are volunteers if it's starting somewhere other than Anchorage. Anchorage is a relatively easy city to get to for people from all over Alaska and for people from outside Alaska. Fairbanks is not as difficult to get to as Skagway, but Fairbanks is, and a lot of other places, are just that much more difficult. Fairbanks is a much smaller city. There's not the infrastructure in terms of hotel rooms and things like that. So if at some point the race were to switch permanently up to Fairbanks, that would require a lot of rethinking how volunteers are put up and housed and how that whole structure of the race would work.
And it is a six-hour drive with good road conditions from Anchorage to Fairbanks. So, you could still get there with relative ease. People travel up and down that road all year long, but it's still a pretty good trek if you're not flying into Fairbanks. So a couple of points that you made there, Alex, I'd like to run past you. Not necessarily from a Mushers perspective, but maybe from a fan's perspective only. Why would distance matter so much? Why couldn't it be a 500-mile race versus 1,000? And what about the number of dogs? And the reason I ask that is because in all of mid-distance racing, you're typically running with 10 or 12, and in races with less than ideal trails, obviously you're running with less dogs for less power and a little bit easier to control. Do either one of those come into play from a fan's perspective on Iditarod or Quest that, it's kind of now it's just a mid-distance race. It doesn't have that allure of Iditarod anymore.
Yeah, I think, it doesn't really matter if it's a 980-mile race versus an 1,100-mile race. I don't think that matters a lot. But if it's a lot less than 1,000 miles, it seems like there's a mystique that you have with running a 1,000-mile race that I don't think you get with running a 500-mile race. Also, because of the way the rules have been set up, there's a lot of key involving the mandatory rests and the 24-hour rests, and it seems like that would have to all be rethought if we were talking about an Iditarod that was only 600 miles, for example. The other thing is I don't know that... I'm not really sure about the number of dogs. I haven't given that a lot of thought, but I would think that if there were fewer dogs and if you were running a shorter distance, there would be a lot more pressure on people to really, really find ways to push the dogs, and the vets and everyone involved in the race officials would have to be very, very careful that teams were not pushing dogs beyond the point where they should be pushed.
So, Alex, what about the other races down in the lower 48? We talked about the East Coast there with the Can-Am 250, I believe it is, the only Iditarod qualifier on the East Coast. But there are obviously other qualifiers along the way. There's one in Oregon. There's the Race to the Sky in Montana. There's the Bear Grease in Minnesota. And the UP 200 in Upper Michigan. Now, as you mentioned, there are some parts of the country that have had very good snow winters. You talked about New York and other parts of the country that have seen a lot of snow over the years. But what do you think about all those guys down there that are, up-and-coming Iditarod mushers, and they live in those places like Minnesota or Oregon or Washington or Montana, whatnot, where it may not just be feasible to pack up a dog truck and come up to Alaska to run our races, but those races may not be anymore because they just don't have the weather, whether it's from climate change or lack of snow. And I think it's interesting, Alex, very quickly, climate change doesn't necessarily parallel the amount of snowfall. It's typically related to temperature than precipitation. Is that right?
Right. And there's also there are El Nino and La Nina effects where there's a lot more precipitation that comes down, which is both rain and snow. So those things are all variable as well.
Right.
Ironically, I read a forecast that says that the lower 48, especially areas like Minnesota and Wyoming and the northern areas in the lower 48 are above average snowfalls. Now, again, that doesn't mean that the snow will stick around or that it will stay cold the entire time, but I would think that that would be a good sign for a lot of these races. Ironically, it may actually end up helping Iditarod, because if more people can be running races in areas where it's easier for the media to cover them, they might get some more media coverage. It might generate some more interest in dog sledding in general, and I would think that is something that potentially could really help Iditarod.
Right. So my last point to you in regards to this, and in particular to these up-and-coming folks, whether they're in Alaska or other places, what do you think about the sort of the thinning out of the pack, so to speak, with far less rookies being involved, with a lot of these races that have been canceled? But, when you're an Iditarod veteran, even if you ran it in the 80s, you can still run the Iditarod in 2017. What do you think about that thinning out effect? Less rookies, but still all those grizzled seasoned veterans out there that can sign up because they don't need those races to run, and, with climate change in particular.
Well, it's something that I don't think we're going to know the effects for like 5 or 10 years. We are at a period where there are not only a lot of rookies who have been running the race for years, but then there are a lot of up-and-coming racers who are not new, but are sort of the next generation of of Iditarod veterans and potential champions, people like Pete Kaiser. And I think that there is going to be a changing of the guard, so to speak, and perhaps that's already started with the dominance of Dallas Seavey over the past few years.
Right. So, Alex, we are just about out of time. Anything else you want to mention here on today's show?
Well, there is often a lot of controversy about the entire idea of climate change and how much of it is man-made and how much of it is a natural, a natural variation. And regardless of what the exact causes are, this is something that is very clearly happening, and it's happening a lot more intensely and quickly in Alaska. And I just am very hopeful that we'll be able to still have snow, and that the sport of dog sled racing somehow will figure out a way to adjust to these changing conditions.
So, not to put you on the spot at all, Alex, but do you think that we are, past the tipping point, so to speak? At some point, there's going to be a point in time where there's not a lot we can do about it anymore, whether it's carbon emissions or fossil fuels or whatever argument that you have, too many people and not enough space. Do you think we're there yet? And if not, do you think that's going to occur?
I don't think we're there yet. Maybe I'm just too hopeful for my own good. But I think that we're approaching that point. But I think there's still stuff that we can do, and it will require really being vigilant and being honest about what's going on, and perhaps looking at solutions that we've been reluctant to look at before. But I think there definitely is still a lot that we can do to mitigate or perhaps even reverse some of what we've seen in the past 20 or 30 years.
Very good. So, Alex, we are just about out of time. What I would like to talk about next time, and just a little bit of a teaser for the folks that are listening now, we haven't talked about it on this show yet, and we're going to go outside of our long-distance Iditarod Yukon Quest Alaska racing comfort zone a little bit, Alex. I would like to spend a show talking about the stage stop up in the Wyoming, Montana, Utah area. How about it?
Excellent. I am very much looking forward to that.
All right, Alex, how can folks find you on Facebook and Twitter?
I am at Coldfoot Films on Twitter, and you can find me on Facebook at Alex M. Stein or mushthemovie.com.
And we will make sure that we try to stay apolitical on our Facebook pages, at least for the couple of days, because it's getting kind of nasty out there, isn't it?
It really is, and I think that no matter what side or how neutral you try to become, I think almost everyone I know is wishing that this election could be over sooner rather than later.
Can't wait for November 5th. So, Alex, take care. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks, okay?
Okay. Thanks, Robert.
Thank you. On behalf of my co-host, Alex Stein, this is Robert Forto for Mushing Radio here on KVRF 89.7 in the Mat-Su Valley. We'll talk to you guys next time. Goodbye.